independence, that while there's a lot of aspiration to promote art, the willingness to make the really big changes that are necessary to actually make Irish a sort of central part of the existence of the state or people's day-to-day lives, there doesn't seem to be a huge appetite for that kind of transformation, for which it must be said there's not very many examples worldwide, I think, of, you know, cultures changing the language that they speak. It's a very difficult thing to achieve.
Talking about Ono Duffy, it struck me as a kind of bizarre thing in a way in your book that the man didn't speak Irish all that well himself, and yet once independence came and once he came to a position of power, he was talking about things like making the Gardaí 100% Irish speaking and making Galway an Irish speaking city. He set out to achieve something that he knew probably wasn't possible.
What I argue in the book is that O'Duffy's attitude to Irish is a bit like his attitude to a whole range of very important things, including his attitudes maybe to kind of morality and behaviour and even sexuality, in that you sort of have a kind of an idealisation of perfect Irishmen or perfect Irish society, and you have a huge kind of enthusiasm to make the changes to bring that about. But at the end of the day, there are these kind of glaring contradictions that it's very difficult to resolve, and to some extent even this kind of relentless pursuit of a sort of ideal that it's very difficult to individually match up to can be quite destabilising in terms of one's psychological well-being. In the case of Ono Duffy, it seems to crack up in various ways in life, but also in terms of the well-being of society, because if we look at post-independent society into war, and one of the characteristics seems to be this kind of preoccupation with striving for these kind of high standards of behaviour, whether it's in terms of morality, sexual morality, Irish speaking, other aspects, which are very difficult to achieve and can result in quite a lot of hypocrisy in terms of people saying one thing and, you know, finding it difficult to do. More cynically, I think you can look at the attitude of someone like Ono Duffy to the Irish language in terms of this is a very useful attitude to adopt in terms of getting ahead in society. So one of the arguments I make is that O'Duffy was a very popular figure as an IRA leader and more so as Garda Commissioner because he seemed to exemplify this vision of a Catholic Gaelic society. And so O'Duffy takes things like his attitude to the Irish language and wanting to force people to speak it or fire them, or his attitude to sports, and the same thing, wanting to almost kind of compel people to do this. He takes it to extremes, but I think he's probably just reflecting, maybe cleverly, maybe just unselfconsciously, the pervasive nature of these ideas.
At the time of independence, 1922, I was surprised to read in your contribution to the New History of Ireland that there was over 300,000 native Irish speakers in the country, and that that declined quite rapidly again. By the 1960s, there was only, I think, a tenth of that number.
The statistics about Irish speaking in the 19th and the 20th century have question marks over them. In the first census of 1851, there is a suspicion that there is underreporting of the use of Irish. In the later 19th century, early 20th century, there may be an overreporting of the capacity to speak Irish, motivated by the success of things like the Gaelic League. You know, more people said they were competent in it than were. As you go through the 20th century, there are various attempts made to achieve a more realistic impression, maybe particularly in the 1940s or 50s. Like, it isn't surprising that there is a discrepancy between fairly high early figures and lower figures then in mid-20th century due to the phenomenon of whether there is under or over reporting in the answers to census questions. It's a technical issue which has been addressed by many people.
What was originally the Free State had as one of its objectives to revive the Irish language, and going on the figures you could say it was a terrible failure. Maybe that's not the case then.
There are people who have studied this as well. One is a University College Dublin graduate called James McCluskey, who works now, I think, in the California university system. He reckons that the question of Irish should be studied in an international context. I think a bottom line in his study is that if you have 100,000 speakers of a language and the support of the state, you put the language on the road to survival. So the Irish state has probably put Irish on that road to survival in comparison with the experience of other languages and other societies. So you could say it's a qualified success rather than a qualified obituary, as somebody else called it.
Well, I have to confess, now, like many other people who entered the school system, I was exposed to many years of Irish learning but never really picked it up. My excuse, like that of many other people, would be the way in which it was taught and also kind of the baggage that went with the Irish language. When I went to school, it was still very much associated with a Catholic ethos and a nationalism and the state and so on, and it wasn't very attractive in many ways. But obviously a big change that seems to have happened in recent years is that while you still have the element of compulsion very much in the educational system, there's been, I think, a consensus away ideas of compulsion and more towards making Irish, whether it's cool or fun or sexy or whatever, and things like TG Carr. Obviously this is all but the good. To find that balance between Irish being, you know, promoted and protected by the state, and without at the same time giving it that kind of special position that was underpinned by compulsion. There's probably some social or cultural differences between North and South. My understanding is that the Irish schools in the South is at least criticised by someone as a bit of a young phenomenon, middle-class parents regarding these schools, not necessarily because of the love of Irish, but just as good schools to get their kids into. I think in the north, the Irish school movement is more connected with Catholic working class areas, so I think there are some differences there, but it does seem to be growing in popularity. And obviously, the problem that the Irish language has to face here is that it's politicised in a very different sense than it ever was in the south. While the Irish language is championed by nationalist and republican politicians, the fact that it's still seen as very much an issue tied up with the Republican project, I think, is, to put it mildly, a mixed blessing.
I'm more interested in the language as a cultural resource, you know, and if people wish to see a relevance to it, that's where the pay dirt lies. It encompasses a fantastic worldview of two millennia of human experience, the depth of which has yet to be plumbed or explored. Politics, I mean, you'd have to define exactly what politics is, so I won't take any simple perspective on that word, rather than look at Irish for its humanity and its relevance to all sorts of areas of interest.
Are we better off that we speak English, or that we all can speak English at least?